Michigan's Children proudly presents Speaking for Kids, the podcast where we explore crucial conversations impacting the lives of all Michigan children, youth, and families, especially the most vulnerable. Join us each month as we explore public policies and issues in the best interest of our kids and families. We'll bring you lawmakers and policymakers, advocates fighting for change, and the people most affected by those decisions. With our host, Matt Gillard, President and CEO of Michigan's Children, we'll invite you to become engaged too and show you how to take action on what matters most to you. Episodes are recorded live and shared virtually on YouTube and the audio hosting sites Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hello, I'm Matt Gillard, the President and CEO of Michigan's Children, and welcome to another edition of Speaking for Kids, the monthly podcast brought to you by Michigan's Children, where we talk about different issues surrounding kids and families with some special guests. And today we're excited to be talking about and highlighting, as many of you listening may know, May is Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States of America. And we have some special guests with us today who work and support children and families in their communities and with different mental health issues. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what the mental health issues facing children and families are in our state and what we think people should know about that, and maybe some ideas we have on how we can create better public systems and better supports for children and families that are dealing with mental health issues. So first I'll introduce Megan Schmelzer. Megan's a longtime friend and advocacy partner of mine and at Michigan's Children. She's currently the IECMH policy manager for 0 to 3. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks, Matt. So great to be here.
And we're also excited to be joined by Angela Parth, who's the executive director of the Livingston Family Center, another organization that we've worked closely with at Michigan's Children for many years. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Angela, why don't we jump right in with you? What do you, you know, if you have one takeaway or one kind of thing to kick us off here, what are some of the mental health issues that you're seeing manifest right now, or you're seeing maybe prevalent in some of the young people and families that you're working with in Livingston County?
Sure. So we primarily work with 11 to 21-year-olds in our Runaway and Homeless Youth program specifically, providing crisis intervention to these families and youth in our community. And I think there's a lot of, I've been doing this for 23 years, and this is the first time I think in my career that I've seen so much anxiety and just an inability of youth to handle daily stressors that creates real crisis situations, not only for the youth themselves, but also their families and in school environments. So that anxiety and stress to tolerance is really prevalent, what we're seeing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think we're seeing that, you know, across all age spectrums. The reality is right now with everything that's going on. So Megan, you know, you, Angela, they serve mostly 11 to 21 year olds. I know that your work is obviously focused on our much younger children, but how do mental health issues show up in infants and toddlers? And even though they can't express it with words, and talk to us a little bit about the work you're doing with families as well to help deal with the mental health issues that families are facing.
Yeah, absolutely. First, did you know that babies have mental health? Because many people don't still. It's pretty amazing. And that's generally how I start these conversations. And most people, when I say that, they envision a baby laying on a couch in a very Freudian way, you know, in a very traditional talk therapy sort of way. And that's not at all what it is about. But we do really just want to get the message out wide that babies and toddlers do have mental health, and we can see issues, mental health issues, as early as just a few months old in babies and toddlers, and symptoms of anxiety and depression. So Angela, when you're talking about 11-year-olds, I'm saying absolutely, what did that 11-year-old look like 9-10 years ago? And you might be able to connect the dots and see what that looks like now, and realize that these experiences might have started much earlier. So what does it look like in babies and toddlers? They show us, they tell us through their behavior. And so they don't, obviously, the younger ones don't use words. Some of the older ones use words, 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds. But they show us through their play, and they show us through issues with eating, issues with sleeping, issues with being comforted or not are not allowing caregivers to comfort them when they are in a situation that a quote unquote normal infant or toddler would show distress. And so there are very clear signs that when adults are looking for them, are able to see. And the good news is that we know how to help them. We know what works. We know these things. And so these issues that we're seeing down the line often can be addressed at a much younger age in 2, 3, 4 year olds, rather than waiting until there's a full blown issue of, you know, panic attacks or severe depression or even suicidality later in life. And so really it is about intervening early, knowing the signs, intervening early, and knowing the difference really between what's normal expressions of big feelings in little kids, and then where is that threshold where things really become more of an issue and you really need to get some additional support outside the home. Right now, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, right now, so I live in Michigan and work with Michigan. I started as an infant mental health therapist in Flint many years ago during the water crisis, actually. And then I got to go to the state level, and that's where I started. That's where Matt and I met and started really that state level work. And now I get to work with other states, with 0 to 3, which is the National Policy Center for Infants and Toddlers. And so we now get to help the adults in these different systems recognize these needs in different ways. I used to do it, you know, helping families and we're having parents and childcare providers understand what these signs are. And now I get to help systems leaders and policy decision makers know what these signs are so that we can make better policies around supporting babies and families in more intentional ways during these years.
Yeah, that's great. So let's, without getting too deep in the weeds here and boring everybody that you and I could, let's just explain a little bit about the Infant Early Childhood Mental Health Consultation Program, what that does. And this is, you know, one of the things that we at Michigan's Children work with 0 to 3 and other partners to try to encourage our legislators and governors to put more public dollars in to support with public investments. But talk to us a little bit just about a high level kind of what that program does.
Yeah. Very simply, we pair mental health therapists, clinicians with childcare providers and realize that that's really the biggest bang for our buck. When you work with families, you get really deep and you get to work with those families with those specific issues and situations. Childcare providers reach many more families. And so when you can support the childcare provider in really intentional ways to see what these cues are, what these flags are, what these behaviors to look out for look like, they get to see all of the families that they interact with. And sometimes, you know, there are very strategies that support all kids that they care for. And there are also specific ways that we can support the individual kids or families or handfuls of them who are showing some of these signs already. And we can intervene again early and then connect them to more intensive services as they might need.
Absolutely. Like I said, and the, you know, from an advocacy standpoint, this is one of the things and one of the opportunities we have with a program like this is to bring more awareness to these programs and to these issues and hopefully create more advocates that will reach out to their legislators and policymakers and urge them to continue and to even increase support in public funding for these programs. So, Angela, let's shift to you for a little bit. I know we talked a little, or you mentioned in the intro, your work at Livingston Family Center. We obviously at Michigan's Children work with you and some of your colleagues in other areas of the state through the Network for Youth and Families. Talk a little bit about what either schools or other youth programs can really do better to support kids who are struggling, or what we can be asking policymakers to focus on. I know we're working on a pilot project right now to expand some services for kids that some of your colleagues have in their purview. But let's talk a little bit about what the, you know, decision makers and policymakers should be thinking about when it comes to mental health issues for young adults.
Yeah, I think, you know, Megan really hit the nail on the head when she talked about outreach and advocacy as much as we possibly can do as far as educating the public and parents and going to where parents and people are versus having them come to us. So when you talk about going to child care providers, it's genius, right? Because they're seeing hundreds of kids every year. So we want to go and educate them so that they're able to also educate parents and also advocate on their own behalf in regards to legislative policy maker opportunities. So I do feel like it's super important, that educational piece, but I also feel like it's a community responsibility, really everybody taking responsibility for creating an environment that really fosters and cultivates healthy mental health for 0 all the way up to 21-year-olds, right? So we all know that kids, children, youth, young adults do better when they feel a sense of belonging to their community. And I think educating adults about the fact that we need to really wrap around the youth in our community to ensure that we're not only listening to what they have to say, but also creating safe, healthy environments for them to be able to express themselves. Many youngsters use and young adults use social media to express themselves, which there's nothing wrong with that. But when our world becomes primarily based around TikTok and other social media platforms, that can be very damaging to our young people. Also, I'm sure Megan can speak to this screen time. Young
Oh,
people
yeah.
in their screen time, we really have to protect their little minds and their brains and let them develop in a healthy way. That's so important. And then as adults, modeling that behavior, we're not on our phones when we're trying to have in-person
Absolutely.
communication with our young people. We're actually engaging in conversations and building, like I said, that community around fostering that healthy environment.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot there. You're absolutely right. So a number of things. So now the part about the phones is especially top of mind for me. I just heard actually a professor on TV this morning on one of the morning news programs talking about how America has fallen way behind the rest of the world on the happiness index and these happiness metrics. And it's really driven by people under 30 in America that are really just for whatever reason coming out, and they're attributing a lot of it to the technology and the phones and people self-soothing with a phone, you know, to an extent that we just haven't seen before, and some interesting research being done on the impact of that and where that goes. But no, I think you're right. I will say this though, I think from a you know from a Michigan public policy standpoint, we've made some progress. We've seen some real focus on student mental health, at least on the school aid side of the budget, and on some investments into mental health issue or services provided at schools. But I think, Angela, your response was right on. It needs to be a community-wide approach. And yes, there is a role certainly for schools to play on, you know, addressing mental health issues, especially for older students. But it really needs to be a community-wide approach. And that's why it's so important, the work that you're doing and others like you are doing around the state to support young people through these issues. Let's before we get back on that maybe a state kick, let's talk a little bit about what potentially at the federal government, some of these funding cuts that are being proposed and what the potential impact those could have. We're having in a self-plug here for Michigan's Children. We're doing our monthly lunch and learn today at noon around this issue and kind of where things stand as the reconciliation bill passed the House and now moves to the Senate. But what are you concerned about? Megan, I guess we'll start with you about what you're seeing coming out of the federal government and potential cuts to funding for programs that help our youngest people, especially.
Ooh, that's a big question. With kind of a short answer, the budget that the president proposed zeroed out all funding sources related to infants, toddlers, and mental health. And that's really scary. Personally, one of the projects that I work on is a technical assistance center, the technical assistance center that supports federal money with two grant streams. There's only two grant streams that are specifically dedicated to infants and toddlers and mental health from the federal government, and that's through Project Launch, which is a grant that Michigan has had many years ago in the Saginaw area. And now there's two more Project Launch grants going on currently in the Detroit area. And there's also a grant stream, Infant Early Childhood Mental Health Grant. And so I work on the Technical Assistance Center that supports these grantees. There's about 66 of them nationally. And we were put on a pause from February until the end of March. And they did lift the pause, which was a good sign. And it looks pretty ominous in terms of, at least from the TA side, if they're going to continue, if federal investment will continue for this work that we're doing. The cuts to Head Start, the cuts to Medicaid, our systems over the past many decades have grown to depend on these funding streams. And regardless of what side of the aisle you are on, as these things shift and change, babies and families are the ones that are going to bear the brunt of this shift in terms of funding at the current moment, in light of what seems potential as this federal budget gets finalized. I will say, since we do work so much with states, it seems that there's a tendency, or at least the trajectory, that states are going to have more opportunity and autonomy to make some of these decisions. And so some of these funding streams, potentially, maybe a tiny silver lining is that states are gonna have, again, more say in how some of these fundings are allocated within our
state. Yeah, so long as the funding's not decimated, right, or cut. Right. I mean, that's the challenge, is we've seen some of these levels come out in some of these proposals that the state just simply doesn't have enough money to make up in all of these areas. And even just the Medicaid issue alone, I mean, our health system in general, physical and mental health included, is so tied into Medicaid, especially in our rural communities, yep, that any significant changes to Medicaid funding to the states has got a real, there's very strong possibilities and likelihoods that you're going to see major disruptions and impacts around our health systems in general, especially in rural communities.
Absolutely.
All right, Angela, from your end, what about at the federal level that's happening that is causing the most concern?
Yeah, so I think it's the uncertainty of what's going to happen. I think that we have grown to have a certain level of predictability around funding streams and, like Megan said, dependency on those. So I think it's the unpredictability of that. I also feel very strongly that a lot of the federal funding that comes through, funnels through to the states, is there to protect our most vulnerable populations, right? So the 0 to 3, also those young people who have very acute mental health issues, our state hospitals that are run for psychiatric care, even private hospitals who do receive some funding. So I feel like all of the federal budget cuts that are happening, which is really going to affect the most vulnerable people in our community and in our state. I do feel like, you know, Megan said that there is a small silver lining around allowing states to have a little bit more autonomy as far as funding is concerned, which I think is great. But I think we're using a chopping axe for something that could be better cut the budget cut by a surgical knife, you know? Right. So just not chopping everything off at once, but allowing states to really kind of come up with planning. This kind of up and down of it's funded, it's not funded, do this, do that, I think is very harmful to programs who aren't able to plan appropriately for those vulnerable populations in our community. But once again, it's about community. We all are responsible for taking care of our children, irregardless of what anybody thinks of politics or how to address mental health. We all know that our most precious resource are our children, right? They're going to be running the country someday. They're the ones who are going to be making these decisions. And if we don't take care of them and give them what they need as far as a healthy environment, you know, it's not going to turn out all that great for any of us. So
absolutely. And not to mention, I mean, all this starting, stopping or uncertainty is not efficient. There's nothing about that creates efficiency. No. I mean, doing this in the name of efficiencies is just insane. All right. Well, thank you. Well, let's shift gears to maybe a more positive note. So Megan, we'll start with you. What's one thing that anybody listening to this can think about or do, start doing, or maybe stop doing to better support children and young people in our state through their mental health issues?
Recognizing that babies and toddlers and young children and children's mental health is tied to adults' mental health. So if the adults in their lives and our lives are making good choices, are taking care of themselves and as many ways as they can holistically. They are, as you said, Angela, modeling screen time and being aware of that. That is going to allow them to then be able to recognize the needs of the little ones that they care for. And that is something we can all do. You get the opportunity every single day, 100 times a day. So that is, in a world where we don't have a lot of control over lots of things, this is something we absolutely, all of us, have control over.
That's great. Great advice. How about Angela from your end? What's one thing people can start doing or maybe stop doing that will make Michigan a better place for young people?
I think starting educating themselves about youth and mental health issues concerning youth, but listening. So I think as adults, we automatically are like searching for a solution to a problem. And I think stepping back and really listening to our youth and our young people about what they need, what they're seeing, you know, what they can benefit from, and just really fostering that sense of belonging in the community. Any adult can do that. I don't, you know, making eye contact and smiling and saying, hi, how's your day going, can make a world of difference to young people who might be in a mental health crisis.
Excellent. Excellent advice from both of you. Well, I want to thank Angela Parth from the Livingston Family Center and Megan Schmelzer from 0 to 3 for joining us today on this special edition of Speaking for Kids, recognizing May as Mental Health Awareness Month here in Michigan. So please reach out to your legislators if you're hearing this. If any of these issues interest you, reach out to your policymakers at all levels. But even at our state government, we're in the midst of a budget process here at the state level as well. And there's going to be important decisions made by our state legislature here over the summer on directing funding towards critical important programs like Megan and Angela both talked about. So thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next month, and please share this broadcast widely to anybody you see fit. Thanks and have a nice day.
You've been listening to Speaking for Kids, the podcast for Michigan's children with host Matt Gillard. Thanks for joining us. To explore these and other issues relevant to our state's children, youth, and families, and to build your advocacy muscle, go to our website at www.michiganschildren.org. You'll find links and news about past and future podcast topics under our Resource tab and action alerts under the Take Action tab. Find and like us on Facebook and Twitter. And Stephen Wallace produced this podcast. Contact them with your questions and ideas for other topics. Michigan's Children is a nonprofit advocacy organization, an independent voice working to reduce disparities in child outcomes from cradle to career through policy change.